Hey everybody, so before we jump into today's podcast, I just wanted to A, thank you guys, give you a little bit of a reminder. If you enjoy this content, however you're watching it, consuming it, please like, follow, subscribe, whatever you gotta do, comment on it if you can, leave us a review. It really helps us out and it can help grow our platform and reach more people. And if you know someone that can benefit from this, please share it with them. If you have a question, if you wanna reach out to us, let us know. And then lastly, we have all of our amazing programs, courses, and coaching available in the resources below. So check that out. Definitely take advantage of it. We have everything from free options all the way up to paid programs and everything in between to fit pretty much anyone's budget. And it's just a matter of how customized it's going to be based on the price point. So there's really something for everybody. Thank you guys. Let's get on into the episode.
Yeah, fighters. What's up, everybody? It's Mike here. Episode 140 of the Life of a Fighter podcast. And today's going to be a kind of a summary or recap of a nutrition workshop, the second one that we did at Rogue Combat Club with Dr. Rena Newton, who is obviously a doctor. She's based out of Asheville, North Carolina in town, which is why we partnered up with her at Rogue Combat Club and with Life of a Fighter. The great thing about Dr. Rena is that she has a background in obviously practicing medicine, but now she's transitioned into a variation of her own practice and company that's called Get to Know Your Body, and she's specifically utilizing in-body scans for now to help people find their fitness and start to get to know their body. And there's going to be some really exciting and interesting things coming down the road as she starts to grow as a business and grows in town, and we can utilize more testing and different types of equipment, and whether it's blood work analysis, whether it's the in-body scans. There's a lot of really exciting stuff that we're going to be working on together and that we've partnered up together with, and these seminars are just one of them. But one of the requests I got was that because a lot of people either aren't in town and weren't able to actually physically make it to the location, or even the people that were in town or a part of the gym, maybe it didn't work for their schedule or things were going on. So what I wanted to do is have an opportunity, A, for our podcast listeners, for you guys, the ones that have been loyal to us, and I appreciate all the support, give you kind of a snapshot into what that seminar was like. We're going to do about 15 to 20 minutes. I'll see exactly what the timeline is, but it's going to be somewhere in that window. And we're going to initially talk about, Dr. Rena is going to explain a little bit about herself, what she does, and then what the in-body scan is, what body composition is, and then go a little bit into my talk on what I was discussing with healthy habits, especially for the holidays coming up, and what certain food cravings are, whether it's sugar cravings, salty foods, fatty foods, things along those lines. And that was really a lot of what the workshop was first body composition, understanding your body. And one of the cool things that Dr. Rena does with myself when we do these talks is she brings her in-body scan to the actual gym so people that are there can get an in-body scan if they've obviously been fasting or haven't eaten for 2 hours or have not had exercise or anything like that. And so we can get there in real time, get the results, and then they can ask me questions afterwards, which is, we had a 2-hour seminar. That's why like about an hour and 15 minutes is the total of the audio recording. Some of that was just Q&A and some in-body stuff that I didn't want to share publicly. But again, this podcast is just a snapshot into the full audio recording. If you'd like to get the full audio and you weren't able to make it, we're going to make it available. And yeah, so you can click on the link below. It's going to be $20 for the seminar, the audio, plus a transcription of everything that we covered. So you'll get actually just a printout version of it or a link to our Google Doc that has all of that information there. Plus, you'll also get access to our Fighter's Guide to Sugar and Food Cravings. I have an entire chart that breaks down not only what you're craving, but then what your potential deficiency could be, whether it's a micronutrient or some variation off that, and then foods that are going to be rich in those vitamins and minerals to make up for it. Plus, I also have my micronutrient cheat sheet and Fighter's Guide to Micronutrients that I'm including for anyone that's not a Fitness Nutrition Vault member that just wants to get access to this nutrition workshop audio. You will also, included in that, get access to our fighter guides that we cover and we discuss about and reference off of it. And I'm just really excited about the involvement in town and the response that we're getting. So I want to say thank you guys for all the support as always. Thank you to our sponsors. And this podcast and every podcast is brought to you by the Life of a Fighter Shop. You can go to lifeofafighter.com/shop and you can get access to our fitness nutrition vault. For example, this is going to be not just our 15 to 20 minute version snapshot of the audio, but the actual full episode is one of those pieces of content that we're going to release to our fitness nutrition vault members. So if you're a member, you get access to it. Thanks for the support. And again, for those that aren't a member that weren't able to make it, you're more than welcome to purchase access to it for $20. But honestly, guys, I'm going to highly recommend just sign up as a Fitness Nutrition Vault member. It's $5 a month or $50 for the year. Not only will you get access to this workshop, but you also will get access to over 80 ebooks that we have. Plus, and baby Lena's really excited about it. I don't know if you guys can tell. Plus, you're also going to get access to different nutrition plans, workout plans, and interviews, private content, all this awesome stuff. So I'm really obviously not only excited about it, but I highly recommend it. Plus, we have our Pro Coach program on there as well. We get customized plans, not just our templated content. And as always, you can click on the links below for our sponsors and details. Without further ado, let's jump on in.
I'm a family physician, and I have an integrated wellness services practice where I do body composition scans, testing and analysis. And since I'm not as prolific as a speaker as Mike is, I brought my notes.
Prepare.
I don't get off on tangents because I do that a lot. So first off, what is body composition? Mike may have already, I didn't hear most of what he said because I was having a little technical difficulty with my stand, but it's working now. So I didn't hear everything, so bear with me if it's just a repeat of what he said. Actually, I won't even say it. Do you guys know what body composition is?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Or what it refers to. You know that?
No, I do.
No, I don't.
Tell us.
All right. So body composition is simply a method of describing what our bodies are made up of. The three main components of the body are fat, water, and lean mass. Lean mass will include muscle, bone, ligaments, tendons, things like that. And these things are all important. I know he touched upon muscle. We all know muscle is very important. Fat, even fat that sometimes gets a bad rap, is very important. Every cell contains some amount of fat in it. And then, of course, water. Water, we all know. Even she knows, I'm sure. So, this machine here is able to distinguish between all of that. Some of the things that it's going to tell you is, number one, your overall weight. We know, we are all familiar with weight. The second thing is it tells you how much water. But more than that, how much water, where is it? Is it inside the cells? Is it outside the cells? Are you dehydrated? Are you chronically dehydrated? Are you retaining water outside your cells versus inside your cells? Things like that. The second thing is lean mass. I know Mike talked about this, but I'll just do a quick recap.
Yeah, muscles.
Lean mass, yep. How much of that lean mass is in your lower body versus your upper body? Do you have sufficient amount of lean mass to support your movements, even the basic movement of walking? Balance, of course. If you're throwing a kick or you're a hook, you know, do you have enough lean mass? Also in your midsection as well. And then fat, my favorite of all the tissues. Fat mass. Do you have enough fat mass? Do you have excess fat mass? Where is that excess? Is it under your skin, or is it in your or around your internal organs? The fat around your internal organs, that's the dangerous fat, or the most dangerous fat, I would say. In excess, it is a contributing factor to a lot of diseases like, I hate to say them all, but there are a lot. Heart disease, heart attacks, stroke, hypertension, diabetes, cancers like breast cancer is a big one, colorectal cancer, even Alzheimer's, dementia. So, We all know. We don't want any of that. So that's why it's important to know what is going on in there. And it's not something you can see with a mirror. I mean, some people are really good at hiding it. I am very good at hiding it. In fact, me and my husband, there was a time that we weighed the exact same amount. Actually, I was a little bit heavier than him. But our body compositions were entirely different. So, with all that said, I mean, we've already talked about the benefits of having optimal body composition. What does that mean for us, all of us here? Well, one thing is it'll give you a baseline snapshot into your health, kind of like getting your blood pressure or getting your cholesterol levels checked, and nutrient levels checked, things like that. It'll give you insight and a more awareness as to your body and, you know, just your general state of health. It can also help guide us. It can help guide you in your training regimen. Your doctor, your nutritionist, or your trainer can use those results to help guide any intervention strategies, like what types of movements are you going to do. Like Mike was talking, high-intensity interval training, do you need that? Do you need more of the steady-state cardio? You know, what are your needs? This will help determine. It also helps track. So you're doing all these fabulous things for your health, but what is it really doing for your body and the composition? The next thing is it takes out guesswork, trial and error. It helps avoid frustration, because like Mike was saying, you step on the scale and you're like, wait a minute, I gained like 5 pounds and I've been, you know, training and sleeping well and managing my stress, but my weight is just going up. And it also helps motivate us. Now, I will say there are several methods of determining body composition. We all know about the scale. I mean, that only tells us weight, so it doesn't really tell us composition. We all know about BMI, which is body mass index. That's your weight divided by the square of your height. So that's only taking into consideration height and weight. Once again, it's not telling us anything about anything else. This is the point where I need to show you this picture.
This is a good reference point, by the way. I like this visual.
I don't know if you can see, but... So these ladies easy all the weigh... Sugar, dude. Oh, why that? I don't need that. Thank you. So these ladies all weigh 70 kilos. That's about 154 pounds. And you see, they're all different heights, different shapes and sizes. So this is just to show they all weigh the same, but entirely different body composition. And one more picture.
Gotta love visuals.
Okay, so I love this picture. I'll start here. This picture is a bunch of, they're all female athletes in the peak, or in their prime, of their different sports that they play. I'll just let you guys take a look first. In the prime of their all kinds of, there we got volleyball players and marathon runners, whatnot. So these ladies, they're in their prime, professional athletes. If you were to use either the scale or BMI alone, it will tell you that some of these women are underweight, overweight, and not healthy. But I would beg to differ. So that's just the scale and BMI. But there are some other modalities that you may have heard of. We have the dunk tank, where you get in this pool of water. We have the bod pod, where you sit in this spaceship-looking thing. and those are all pretty interesting to see. However, they do not tell us anything about visceral fat. They don't tell us anything about hydration. They don't tell us anything about the distribution of lean mass or fat mass. There are some might ask me, what about CT scan or MRI? Now those are very accurate, those are very accurate. However, I mean, where are you gonna get an MRI? You can go to the hospital, it's gonna cost you thousands of dollars. You can get a CT scan, that will also cost you thousands of dollars, and you'll be exposed to radiation. So we don't want that. So that's why I love the InBody. The InBody has been around for several years. I mean, not several, maybe 20 plus years or more. It's used around the world. It's used in different hospitals, clinics, professional sports teams, athletes. Bunch of these guys, they're familiar with it and have used it. And the cool thing about it is it only takes 1 minute, or less than 1 minute, to read your results. How does it work is it generates a low-level electric current in the machine, and this current flows through your body, doesn't hurt, you won't feel anything, and they can, I know these three have had it before.
You can attest to that.
So they can confirm.
You don't feel anything.
It's horribly painful. I was crying.
We made him be here.
So you don't feel anything, so the low-level current will flow through your body, and as it flows through the different tissues, it encounters different degrees of opposition to the current, and that opposition or impedance is calculated, measured, and then translated into the different amounts of tissue that you have. So, and after you scan, it generates a detailed printout of all your numbers and graphs and all these cool things that I will review with you if you chose to get one today or in the future. Mike is also, he also reads them. And my office is in Biltmore Park. It normally costs $95 for the scan, the interpretation, and the recommendations. However, Rogue members always get a $10 discount, regardless. But for the special event, we're doing another $10 off. Just so happy to be here. So it's $75 for that. And in conclusion, I always like to read a quote. Bear with me, the geeky side. I'm gonna read my favorite quote. It's by the former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, rest in peace. He said, "Knowledge is power, information is liberating." He goes on to say, "Education is the premise of progress in every society, in every family." And that's the end. But then I add, "and in every body." In every body spiritually, but in every body just like tangibly, muscle, fat, water. So I'll be sticking around if you guys have questions. I mean, I can ask questions now, later. And if you want to scan, I can scan you, and we can review the results and go from there.
I have questions, Raiden. So I have two. One is, what's your recommended amount to get a scan?
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, what's kind of the prerequisite to a scan? So I know we got to be fasting, time window, things like that. So if I just ate a big breakfast, can I get a scan?
Thank you for asking that. And that's one of the main things. So in order to get the most accurate results as possible, you should not have eaten a meal.
Bless you.
Or done any strenuous, for at least 2 hours. No meals, no strenuous exercise, no sauna, hot tub, ice bath, what are the other ones? Just those three for at least 2 hours. So if you have eaten and you wanted to scan today, I wouldn't recommend it, because it'll be a waste of your money. You want it to be accurate. Also, if you are, obviously if you're pregnant or in your menstrual cycle, it's not recommended, because the readings will be off because of body water shifts. And then there are some people who can never have it, and that is anyone with a heart pacemaker or defibrillator Insulin pumps, we can measure. It just depends on what kind of pump and where the sensor is, if we can take them out, that kind of thing. And I think it was, what was the other question? Oh, how often?
How often, yeah.
So how often you should get a scan depends. It depends on where you're starting. It depends on what your goals or intentions are for your health. It also depends on, I usually recommend, if you are changing or doing something different from your usual routine, say you're going to start like a new eating plan or a new exercise or training regimen, then I say sometimes as soon as a month, as 4 weeks or 6 weeks, no later than 2 months, because we want to see how is what you're doing affecting you. Because you could be doing something and think, yeah, this is great, but then when you get your scan, you're like, oh, crap. She has her headphones on, so we're good. You're like, oh, you know, I gained all this belly fat. And I talked about cortisol and fueling, you know, after, before workouts, that kind of thing. So if you're doing something new, about 2 months, I would say. If it's more of a maintenance, I usually say 3 to 4 months. And then there are some people who are like, listen, yeah. I'm not interested. And I say to them, at the bare minimum, check every 6 months. And the number one reason, at least in my opinion, in my recommendation, in my experience, is at least to see what's going on with the visceral fat. Because that is a silent killer. It's kind of like hypertension. You can walk, or diabetes. You can be walking around with high blood pressure, walking around with high blood sugars, and not even know it, until a lot of damage has been done. So that's the same with visceral fat. So I say, if you don't care about anything else, let's check visceral fat at least 6 months. I have even gone as far as to say at least once a year, but I just want to make sure we are all aware, because I'll add a little story. How much time do we have? It's a short story.
Always good time for stories. I love stories.
I am a family doctor, and I used to work in the Detroit metro area. And I'll tell you, if a patient came in to see me and they did not say they had hypertension or diabetes, I'll be like, wait, are you sure you don't have hypertension or diabetes? What I'm trying to tell you guys is that so many people are walking around with these metabolic diseases and conditions and not even knowing it until it's too late. So I love this tool. I mean, in most medical offices, we tend to look at weights and BMI. But, like we already talked about, like, how do I say this? Like,
being very PC right now.
Very PC.
How do I say this politely and respectfully? It's not telling us anything, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So let's, at the bare minimum, let's do a scan to at least know about that. And then, I mean, everything else is just as important, but I would say that one is one that the consequences can be very grave. So, yeah.
Yeah, really? Oh.
Thank you, dude.
Any
questions?
Anybody else have questions? No? All right.
Yeah. I need a small little thing at 10:30. Is that
too? No, we say small.
I had the same question. Because yeah. We worked out from
9 to 10. Well, yeah, we want 9 to 10 and you 10:30. So I would say like 12:30 would be the earliest, and then 12 for you with the workout.
I also had some pomegranate at like, what, 10:15 or something?
10:15.
Yeah.
Just pomegranate, the fruit?
Yeah.
Just that. Oh, that's fine. Okay. That actually, that should be fine. Okay. But you said you did train though.
Yeah.
Nine to ten. So for you, by 12 we should be good. 12:30 we should be good. If you guys, stick around, I'll be here, so we can get you scanned. In fact, I'll ask Matt to. I'll just give all of you a form, just so you can be familiar with it and checklist and all that. Whether you scan today or in the future, at least you have an idea of what I will ask you. It is very brief. Eventually in the future, I will be offering a little bit more into the blood work and to kind of correlate with your nutrition and training and other lifestyle practices.
And I just want to throw my two cents on that. And that's why I'm really excited to be partnering with Dr. Rena and what we're doing here at Rogue and trying to do this, because this is just one facet to an overall lifestyle. That's the biggest thing. Even though we call it a nutrition workshop, I really want to look at it as a lifestyle kind of a workshop and how we can build these tools and do all of these things that – and a lot of times we look at even what, no matter what the potential concerns could be, what we have to be aware of is the cost we're not just doing, or the damage potentially we're doing, or the health that we have now, but what about 20 years from now? When we talk about Alzheimer's, when we talk about dementia, mm-hmm. I work with the geriatric population more these days. In the last year especially, I've worked with Mission and working with the geriatric population. You see the potential downside to dementia, ignoring certain things and symptoms and indicators to this, whether it is our visceral fat or our blood sugar levels or all of these things. So if we're constantly noticing these issues, or if we're not even checking the data, we don't know we're walking around with diabetes. Diabetes is considered a real big concern now, especially, and Dr. Rena maybe get more insight to, even with dementia and correlations between it either starting sooner or just having it in general, especially if you're genetically predisposed potentially to different health concerns. So I think it's important, even if you think long-term, like financially, what's going to cost more? Whether it's coming to the gym, taking care of your life, having healthy food choices, all that, or having, you know, worst case, if you have cancer, like, or if we're going into hypertension, you have to have a heart surgery, or we have to have any kind of issue like that. We're talking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars versus hundreds of dollars in treatment or anything like that. And honestly, to me, quality of life comes over everything else. And there's ways that you could scale up or down these options, but I think it's the worthwhile investment for across the board, all the things that we're doing, not just financially, but the time that we're investing and the energy and into the people you surround yourselves with. That's a big thing I noticed, and you can put in two cents too, is it's not just the decisions we make in the gym, but it's who do you surround yourselves with? That's a measure of your ability to succeed. If you have, like, for example, when I was living with my brother and I was fighting, the day before my weigh-ins, he would make a fresh batch of cookies. Like chocolate chip, delicious cookies right before I have to make weight, and I'm dying. That's a little over-exaggeration. I'm not literally dying, but we're hungry. We're potentially cutting weight. And so looking at that, that's my example of the people that you surround yourself with. That's like I like being at the gym. I don't hang out with a lot of people outside of the gym environment, not because I don't like them, but because of what's the influence that they're going to have. And that's not to say we won't go out or eat other things too. We're talking about we can enjoy our lives, but for the most part, eating those good choices and having those good choices and being able to support one another is a big factor as well, I think, is just as important as all those other things. So that's my kind of spiel on that part of it too. I don't know if anyone else has more questions.
I was wondering if there's ways to target, visceral fat with specific exercises, and then also, are there specific foods that will end up more as visceral fat as opposed to like adipose?
Ooh. I kind of have something for that, but I don't know if you have anything that you want to put in first.
The research shows that cardiovascular exercise, and I know that's so broad. Cardiovascular exercise has been shown to help reduce visceral fat. But that's not to say that all the other types of exercise and movement doesn't help. But this is what has been studied, and I don't know the specific numbers. I would have to pull up the studies in terms of cardiovascular versus other types of exercises, the amount of visceral fat it helps you lose. So that's one. Number two is any kind of physiologic stress and psychological stress on the body has a negative impact on visceral fat.
I got maize.
So things like...
No way. What she said.
So things like if you're not getting enough sleep, that is and maybe you're not getting sleep because of psychological stress, but that causes physiologic stress on the body, and then there's a whole cascade, which we won't be going into right now, that ends up making you more prone to increase or excess amounts of visceral fat,
right.
storing fat there. And then once the fat is there, it's like a vicious cycle. Once it's there, it starts, that fat around there actually starts acting like a whole new, like an organ, producing hormones, more cortisol in particular. And cortisol is known as a stress hormone. We need cortisol, but not in excess amounts constantly throughout the day. So cardiovascular exercise, number one per the research, but all types of exercise. Number two, stress resiliency. And what's going to bring stress resiliency or stress managing your stress better? So is making sure you're getting enough sleep and supports, be it spiritual support from family and friends. I mean, not to sound cliche, but it's all connected. Every single thing that we do. Foods. So foods, once again, the whole vicious cycle. People who are chronically or have chronic elevation of cortisol tend to crave carbs and sweet, sugary foods. So, because your body is basically telling you, give me this, give it to me right now. So you just keep eating the carbs, and then visceral fat keeps getting more and more, and then everything spirals out of control. So diet, once again, this is a general answer, but diet in general is important. Nutrition in general is important. That's why we're doing a whole nutrition seminar. Specific foods, this is very general, but once again, whole foods, we want to avoid preservatives. There are thousands of different, hundreds of different preservatives that will promote visceral fat gain. And of course, your macros, how much are you eating carb-heavy foods without moving, not getting enough protein to boost your metabolism, to help you be able to burn the fat that's there. But in general.
Yeah, so the one thing that I wanted to kind of implement and use that as a nice transition is, A, especially from what I've seen, not just in the research, I 100% agree with you, from a cardiovascular standpoint, but going back to that steady state cardio, and that's why I'm a big fan of steady state cardio for specific fat loss, is because for every calorie we're burning, the studies have, at least the ones that I've been citing and seeing, have shown between 60 to 65% of those calories are going to be of fat. So you're burning a higher percentage of fat from that steady state cardio. Again, the downside to it is once we stop moving, we stop burning those excess calories. But you can kind of – it's hard to – you can't just fat loss, right, from one part of our body. But if we're burning a higher percentage of fat, it's going to pull from overall. So kind of indirectly, we will pull from visceral fat and the adipose tissue around our midsection. The other thing that I think becomes helpful is also having more lean muscle tissue. So we're constantly burning more calories, increasing our basal metabolic rate. But the other part that I'm actually going to pull up on, and this is what I'm going to include in the email that we're sending, is I have a micronutrient cheat sheet that I did an entire guide on. And the concept to it was to kind of show not just the micronutrients, vitamins, and minerals that we have, but some of the roles that they play. And vitamin C is a very interesting one that I like to tell people that can help with fat loss indirectly, because it's a part of the process in synthesizing L-carnine, which is an amino acid. We can help metabolize calories and help metabolize fat specifically. So an indirect benefit is just upping vitamin C that I've seen and having that increase in L-carnitine in your system, which will help increase that fat burn. And there's a benefit to that, as well as magnesium, which is going to help metabolize carbohydrates and fat as well. Yes. So, but just increasing some of those nutrients and also looking at your cravings, thinking if you are craving chocolate, that may be a magnesium deficiency. So maybe we can implement that. So that's some of the strategies I like and that I think can be pretty effective right off the bat, starting today. If that makes sense. I'm actually going to pull up my little extra cheat sheet to go over some of the extra foods.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the chart.
Yeah, it took, honestly, it's, I want to say it's about 5,000 words. So it's a little lengthy, guys. So I don't expect you to like read every single bit. But what I did find, and I want to, so we're using this in conjunction, and I kind of wanted to spend some time on how I want you to use the tools I'm going to send you guys in an email. Is you're going to get two real important parts are the food cravings chart that'll have, again, if you're craving sugar, you potentially may be deficient in phosphorus, calcium, chromium, those things. And then it's a list of what foods you can find those in. But then also I have a second one that's the micronutrients. So if you want to look at if you are phosphorus deficient, one of the things, or let's say magnesium again. So I'm going to pull up let's even look at iron deficiency. So then if we have an iron deficiency, there's going to be different functions that iron's playing in your body that may be – that's why those symptoms are feeling that way, whether it's a lack of energy or if you're feeling cold in your hands or whatever's going on there. Each different nutrient plays a role. We have all these vitamins and minerals that we need because they play roles in our body. And if we're deficient in them, we're going to see it not just potentially in blood work or our nutrient panels, but in how we're feeling and how we're doing and how our body's functioning. So I think that's another really important tool that I want you guys to use when you do go home and use that as healthy habits, saying, okay, what am I craving? Boom, I looked at that. These are the foods. And then also, if you want to get a little more information out of it, this is kind of the functions of all these different things that are happening, whether it's phosphorus, magnesium, calcium, vitamin C, vitamin B. B vitamins play a big role because not just energy production, but assistance with immune system and all those different factors that come off of it. So that's kind of a little bit of, I guess, more elaborated version of that, if that makes sense. But does that make sense? Like, cool. Bam. What other kind of questions? So I also want to, like, just put it out there. I'm going to stand, like, one thing I think that's interesting and what I've seen with studies too, and I'm be curious to hear everyone else's experience, but I've found that 40 minutes to about 2 hours is like a sweet spot of information intake. So I like to take about 40 minutes to an hour. I figure we could stand and just move for a minute, whether it's grab some water, take a sip, stretch out for a second. So we're not just sitting planted here. Take a couple minutes to just do that, loosen up and give our brain a second, and then come back and just kind of keep going into it. And if you guys have questions, let's talk about it. But let's all just kind of like maybe, again, you don't have to stand. You can sit if you're relaxing. But I think it's good to just get some blood flow. Again, parasympathetic state. We rest a little bit. Oh, my leg's a little sore because Alex beat me up yesterday. What about questions, guys? Talk to me about questions right off the bat. I have some more things we're going to kind of dive into a little bit more specifically with
what,
those nutrients. Yeah.
What's the upper limit of per sitting?
Oh, that's a very interesting question. I've seen a lot of different stats and numbers on that. I think part of it relates to your size and muscle mass. And that's why I think it's very important and valuable to have an in-body scan or some scan that gives you lean muscle tissue. So I've seen anywhere from like 25 grams to 55 grams, depending on how much mass you have. And again, that lean muscle tissue. But across the board, I would say for most of the people, minus you, would be like 25, 35, might be that sweet spot. Doctor, you might be able to throw some inside. But I would say for you, you might even be able to get away with 40 to 50 because of your muscle mass and your tissue.
I try not to do more than 40.
Yeah. Otherwise, again, there's a strain on digestion, your gastrointestinal system, but also just the absorption rate. You may just be wasting time and energy and money. If your body's not absorbing that and just excreting it out, why not take it at another time? But that's also, there's a balancing act. Sometimes when we do like
steak and eggs and have a protein shake.
Yeah.
In one sitting.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, how much are we really getting out of all of that versus if we were to, you know, break it up into two meals and give an hour window in between. But potentially after a workout, your body may be more susceptible, not susceptible, more prone to absorbing that and redistributing it and handling it. But that's another. And then if we want to get even more complex, we can talk about whey versus casein protein, fast digesting protein versus slow digesting protein. What kind of hybrids? Are you sensitive to lactose? Are we sensitive to certain types of whey? Do we want to go grass-fed whey? Do we want to go a vegan option or a vegetarian option? And that's where it can get a little bit more complex as well. Right? She knows. She's like, yeah. It's overwhelming, dude. That's how I feel.
Showing
sometimes.
Got 20% battery, guys.
Yeah. She's like, it's very overwhelming.
Our well-behaved window is short.
She's doing good, man.
Some of your favorite sugar substitutes.
Ooh.
Stevia, erythritol.
Yeah. So I do like stevia. I actually just brought some in for my coffee. And I was just telling the guys. So I have it in the back. I find that's the best. And also, like, going back to dementia and going back to potential strain on other systems. So what's really interesting I find is our body can have an insulin response even if there's not a caloric association to the sweetener, your body can still sense it as a sugar enzyme. So it'll release insulin and trigger these responses similar to as if you were eating sugar. So you might as well kind of eat sugar. And I found from the downside, like with aspartames and things like that, is your body creates this response. It's anticipating sugar. So it gets an insulin, but then it gets a crash afterwards. And then I even find I have more hunger because my body responded. It was expecting calories. It was expecting to have sugar. It didn't get any calories. And it's like, hey, we still need calories. And then it causes me to eat more.
What happens when I eat pasta?
Well, that's a whole nother. That's a whole
nother. Hungry an hour later.
You're like, hey, I want all the simple carbs coming in. And that's the other thing too. Like, and that's all right, so like think about this. So I don't know if you have this experience, Brian, but if I eat a bowl of pasta by itself, carbohydrates is the most simple digesting macronutrient option that we have. Whether it's complex or simple, it's still going to be the more faster digesting option. If we can add, and I've seen some really interesting studies that show if you just add protein or if you mix with a more fibrous vegetable in there or more fibrous foods, it'll actually slow the glycemic index or glycemic load or the amount of time it takes for that item to be broken down and turned into sugar and go into your bloodstream. Ideally, we want the most amount of time, unless it's right after or right before a workout, for the food that we get into our body to turn into sugar to hit our bloodstream, because if it goes in all of it right away, you have a short window for your body to either, all right, we're going to burn this, store it in our glycogen as muscles if we had activity, or we're going to store it as fat, which is going to be the more likely option, especially depending on how much we ate, how much insulin is being released, and so on and so forth. And I don't know if there's anything that...
I guess you maybe just reiterate for your question about the sugar substitutes is, in general, I'm a very liberal kind of liver. You know, I'm like, eat what you want, do what you want, you know, the whole point, we don't...
I shouldn't say this either.
We're all gonna die anyway. But we want to have, while we're here on this earth, to have a good life and a good quality of life. So I usually tell people, if you want, because we can get into a lot of the nitty-gritty, but for the purposes of today, generally speaking, I usually tell people, whole foods, unprocessed, even, you know, instead of, you know, drinking some shake that has a bunch of erythritol, which is one of those sugar substitutes that can wreak havoc on people's gut, some people's gut, and good bacteria, and blah, blah, blah. Or some of the other ones, like aspartame, we all know it causes, it's a neurotoxin, carcinogen, sucralose, all of them, even stevia, like Mike mentioned, it will, even though it's not an actual calorie, it does, like, the, not to go into the detail, but your body perceives it as an actual calorie and boosts your insulin and all kinds of stuff happen. So I usually say, instead of drinking that shake or the erythritol in it, have some fruit. You know, if you really want something sugary, go for the natural sugar.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then you can start breaking it down. Mike can work with you on that. I can as well in the future. we can start talking about how much of each, the timing of each. Certain, and of course, people have allergies, and we have to, you know, put that into consideration. Some people don't react well to grains. In general, I do advise people to, the foods that I say to limit are not many. They're grains. And I don't say don't eat grains at all. Definitely don't eat grains at all if you have experience stomach upset and bloating and things like that, or you actually have something like celiac disease. But grains, soy mainly, because most of the soy is genetically modified. So once again, it's not necessarily a whole food. And our body is still trying to get used to all these, what I call frankenfoods, Frankenstein, manufactured in the lab kind of foods. So grains, soy also, because it tends to mimic estrogen. And estrogen is wonderful for all of us, including men, but we don't want too much estrogen either. So grains, soy, dairy is another one. in general, I don't say don't have dairy, but just pay attention to how it's affecting your body. You don't want to overdo it, because dairy tends to boost insulin quicker. So your insulin will just kind of spike up and then crash, and you feel awful, and you're not even well fueled, and then your cells start becoming resistant, and then we just go down that whole spiral. So grains, soy, dairy. What's the other thing?
Refined sugars.
Refined, processed sugars or any refined foods, period. And then preservatives, anything with preservatives in it, you want to limit it. I know it's hard to escape it. Almost everything, even the good stuff have preservatives in it. And just kind of, your body will talk to you. Our bodies talk to us all the time. And you guys know your bodies more than your doctor or I would, even with a scan, or even what Mike would know. We know our bodies. We just need to maybe listen a little bit more closely to what it's telling us.
Yeah, I think that's great. No, and like to kind of just piggyback on that, it's the idea of like, even now, let's say for if you have a hearing aid or whatever tool, even if you put it on, you can hear better. You still have to dial it in to that specific person or whatever the tool is. So it's just learning to dial in your body's listening. Learn to how to listen. And saying, okay, again, that's why the food charts, and saying, okay, I am craving magnesium, but sugar is the biggest one. And what I wanted to take as an opportunity is to kind of go with everyone and ask, what do you think maybe one of the biggest cravings are for you, and give you some examples of some answers or options that you may have. So I'll start, like, just even, again, I love chocolate. So magnesium, and we talked about it. Magnesium is going to help with fat metabolism, with carbohydrate metabolism. There's even some DNA repair that it's beneficial with. And then looking at sources for it, I'll give you some of the examples of some of my favorite that are on this list. Right off the bat, nuts or variations of seeds. I'm a big fan of like trail mix or mixed nuts. The tricky thing that I always like trying to emphasize with people is, for example, if we go next door at the gas station, there's going to be a couple options of trail mix. Maybe the mixed nuts bag, but then there also going to be the one with the M&Ms and chocolate. Kind of feeding right back into that initial craving. So it's, yes, even though we want some nuts and seeds, legumes, or again, fruit. So I would say, as opposed to that, and even doing dehydrated fruit with added sweetener, do fresh fruit with some almonds or cashews or things like that. But at the same time, in 20 minutes, you can eat a lot of food. So if you take a whole bowl and put it in front of you, you could still eat a tremendous amount of calories. Even if you're giving into or you're addressing the food cravings portion of it, you don't still want to be able to overeat and overconsume at the same time. So still, whether it's, I don't want people to be, again, overly concerned with measuring everything and tracking calories and obsessing over it. I find it's helpful for me. The way I log it is I'll take pictures of the food, and it just kind of keeps it aware and keeps my servings in check. Some people find, again, using our hands as the tool, or actually just regularly using the measurements that we standardly will do, that's perfectly fine as well. But that's just kind of one example. So I will use a quarter cup of mixed nuts, and then I'll do one fruit, whether it's an apple, I slice it up, and then maybe sometimes I'll add some almond butter or peanut butter, depending on what's going on. So I think that's one example of what we can do. And if let's extrapolate that out to the holidays. So for Thanksgiving, for example, if I'm craving chocolate at the end, I'm still having pumpkin pie. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I'm still going to have some pumpkin pie. But instead of eating the entire pie, which I've done also as well, I'll do a slice. And then I'm going to have either pineapple on the side with some almond butter. Not everyone's going to put almond butter or peanut butter on their pie. I'm not expecting you to do that. But that's one way I find to kind of work it in there. And then also kind of going to the bacteria point of it, like your gut works with your brain, and there's a connection that we more have started to understand now over the last 10 years maybe. Don't mind me. I'm going to just keep pacing. The coffee's kicking in kind of hard right now, guys, so I'm going to just kind of pace a bit. But so when we look at that gut health, so even if I gave it some of that sugar, I'm also giving and trying to get the good gut bacteria in my gut to flourish by giving it the fats and the protein from the other sources of food. And sometimes we may have the initial problem or the initial objective of just saying, okay, my gut health isn't healthy. I have to initially change that with a probiotic option or eating more probiotic-rich foods that will also be in this list that I'm going to send you guys, whether it's with our yogurts or our kimchi or fermented foods that we're going to use, or just working with a supplement that you trust and like. We can help with that and kind of give you a different direction. But that's something you may have to address first, is knowing,
all right, my gut health isn't where I need it to be, and I need to make those adjustments first and foremost before I can even worry about body fat percentages and macronutrient ratios and total caloric intake. Because if our gut health isn't on point, everything else may have to fall to the side as well. So that's my example. I figured, is anyone that like, you, again, you guys don't have to tell me cravings and things like that, but I'm more than open to talking, Brian.
Water and pickles.
But, all right, so boom, let's talk about fat and salt. Yeah. Now, is that together or?
Fats and salts.
Yeah.
So bacon, pickles,
yeah.
Butter.
So let's pull it. So perfect one. So our let's say oily snacks, fatty foods is one of the biggest indicators is the calcium deficiency. So electrolyte, there's factors there. We could take it in maybe intra-workout. That looks at options with supplement powder. But also from a food standpoint, adding in mustard is one of the biggest ones that I have on that can be kind of easy to add. And there's variations to it. But one of the things that we'll find in it is our turmeric, which can be there's a lot of benefit to it. So that's a lot to unpack. But adding that into maybe a salad, whether it's a spicy mustard option or something along those lines, or looking at, we can do pretty much rich green vegetables across the board. So we're talking about kale, we're talking about broccoli, we're talking about spinach, we're talking about covered kale. I wanted to say that one again. One of the recommendations on here is turnips. And then also looking at beans and legumes. So that's also trying to see where it fits into your macronutrient ratio, your caloric, because you're cutting to 185. So that's a little bit more dialed in than we would say for the average person. So we got to be very on point. So as long as it fits the macros that you have and your total caloric needs, I think going to that option, saying, okay, I'll put some mustard in, whether it's a salad or on a sandwich, or if we're even having bread or just the meat. Like I even like meat and cheese roll-ups, put a little mustard in the middle and then roll it up and eat it, and then maybe have vegetable on the side or a salad. That tends to work for me too. So that's an option. Now let's look at, so we said fatty foods, but also salty foods, and that's a big one. And then like even one of the ones I like on here too that we can cover is coffee and tea. There's cravings and some indicators on that, like phosphorus and some energy things that are going on there. But salty or just salty foods in general or items, looking at chloride can be a big deficiency that we might be working with. So when we're talking about chloride, we can look at goat milk or different, again, talking about dairy too, like we got to be a little bit aware of how your body responds. So maybe raw goat milk could be an option, maybe not. Also, again, looking at probiotics, that might be beneficial, but Greek yogurt, that's another option, whether we take Greek yogurt and then we're going to put on going back to, actually, you don't want to put vegetables in there. I was going to say, but you have it on the side. Don't put it in there. I like to just mix everything together in one bowl. I'll put the weirdest thing. Like, I'll put, like, chicken meatballs in on a salad with some, like, marinara sauce. Or, like, I'll put weird things together. I do weird things. So when we're talking about, again, going to the chloride, we're going to maybe some milk. So fish can be a good option. Again, the balancing act with fish, too, is where to come from, how much are we eating. We're talking about potential other toxins and concerns there, but meats across the board could be a really good option. So potentially when you're feeling that craving, especially for the salty food, let's have meat. And then if we're going to still add some salt, maybe Himalayan salt versus our processed salt, which I don't think that's as much of a – I don't think you're doing – maybe you are doing a lot of processed salts, but Himalayan or sea salts might be the better option there as well, especially pre- and post-workout. Because your body, because how much are you sweating during training? So that's, you're again, we're maybe on one end of the spectrum here, but it's a good example to utilize is you're losing a lot of fluids. Really, and that's what we look at. I'll give you guys another bit in the email is hydration levels, how we should be hydrating around exercise, because there's more need and loss of hydration, even electrolytes, when we're doing exercise versus anything else. So we want at least an ounce of water per minute typically for the type of exercise that we're doing, or high intensity weight training, or really any kind of high intensity exercises. And it could go all the way up to maybe 3 ounces a minute. So that means if it's 1 ounce a minute, that's 64 ounces an hour. And if we're doing an hour class, that's a half of a gallon, okay? And we don't want to just necessarily drink that by itself. And part of what I'm going to send you guys is a formula how you can figure out the water to electrolyte ratio, which is going to be different for everybody, especially activity and your size. So that's something we'll put in there too. But that's maybe another thing. And actually, you do a good job of staying hydrated, and I've seen you with electrolytes. So that's not as much of a concern. I think it's just looking at, all right, we'll make a switch. Maybe we put in some black beans into a salad afterwards with some spinach or broccoli or whatever kind of green vegetable you want, and then put on some chicken or some fish on top and see how that feels. And if you're like, all right, I don't crave eating an entire salted T-bone steak, or, right. Which I'm not even saying a T-bone steak.
Pickles and a pound of bacon.
Exactly. Or pickles and a pound of bacon. Exactly. So that's one example. That's actually a really good one. Who else? Does that make sense? Does that like help?
But yeah. Those are the most common, besides just sweets and junk food. Those are the most common ones I get.
And honestly, sugar is a little bit harder to dial in because sugar can be an indicator of a couple different deficiencies. Like I'll just go through. Yeah, and or honestly, there can be a psychological, like just a fix of oral fixation, or the psychological aspect of like, I just need something to do. I've been in that rut myself, and like not even a rut, but I've just been in that kind of routine. So when we're looking at sweets, it could potentially be chromium, carbon, phosphorus, sulfur, tryptophan, nitrogen, calcium. Did I say calcium? I feel like I might have just said that twice. No, I didn't. Okay. So again, these we have multiple, and that's where it gets tricky sometimes. Of it may not just be one thing you're deficient in, but a lot of times what you'll find is when you look at these food lists, you're going to see green vegetables almost on all of them. They kind of almost cover or a pretty good source of across the board a lot of different things. So I think when in doubt, a salad can be very helpful. And it's kind of like an old school thought process. Right? Everyone knows salads are good, but it's for a reason. It's not like there's something that's been made up. It's science will hold it true and true time and time again. So yeah, that's kind of my two cents on that part too. Other cravings that maybe we want to know or talk about, or anyone that has anything. Cool. All right, and if you have also like cravings and maybe you just don't want to talk about or anything, you can feel free on the email when I send it out if you want to reply back or anything like that.
I have a craving. Talk to me. So my craving used to be any kind of carby, like a cereal, like a muffin, but late at night. But anyway, that all changed. So the question I do have for you is, it was very weird for me, but I started craving meat, like steak.
Mm-hmm.
And I never was a steak eater. I was like, well, but I actually crave steak. I love fish and chicken, so I crave that too. But sometimes I'm like, I just want steak.
Yeah.
And it's like so bizarre. So
what
could that be?
Right off the top of my head, I immediately want to go to iron. Mm-hmm. Potential iron deficiencies, or maybe potentially surround around, depending on, without getting too like vulgar and into it, like what time of month it is, if we're menstruating, if we're not, like things like that. That has to be not something that I try and pay attention to. Again, obviously firsthand I'll never know that experience, but from when we try and do as much education as you can from books and interaction and work with that, there's potential there. But let's actually look at our little cheat sheet here, and that's why I like having it with me, because off the top of my head I know like the red meats specifically can really be iron. But let's also just look at, I'm gonna scroll. Yeah, so like whether it's anemia or things like that, that's going to be also a factor that comes into play that we could figure out what's part of it. Now, what's interesting is there's one category in here I wanted to touch on that's kind of related to that, not exactly, but like burnt or charred foods in general. I don't know if you like how your meat's cooked, but if you pay attention, sometimes burnt or charred foods might just be carbon in general, and that's, I thought, an interesting fact I never really thought about before. But looking specifically for, and then also kind of bouncing off salted foods. A lot of times when we eat red meat, they'll be either salted or charred. So there could be something else in there that I may say that might be it. But let me see. We're looking at, boom, we got that. So also, besides our iron, iron's the biggest one that's coming up, is we could potentially, there's a big list of amino acids that are associated with it. So whether it's tryptophan, tyrosine, carnitine, all those things, that kind of defaults to what might be causing that craving. But also, like you said, if you're craving other meats as well, it even extrapolates that maybe out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing jumps to me is iron. Iron, 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 iron. And again, I think sometimes, so like, I don't know if you guys remember, they did a study, the World Health Organization, the WHO, not the band, but the WHO's a band, right? Yeah, okay. So the World Health Organization had a study with the NIH, and what it found was, I don't know if you guys remember, I think it was 3 years ago, I did a whole podcast on it with one of our other clinical nutritionists, and it was talking about how it categorized how red meat is just as bad as cigarettes. They got put in the same category of carcinogenic effects and impact. And to me, where I think that study lost all of its weight and validity was that a pepperoni pizza was counted as red meat. So if you're telling me pepperoni pizza is going to be the same category as a grass-fed organic steak from a cow that's lived in a stress-free, hormonal, natural environment, I don't think there's validity to that. And also what they would do, I think it was across a 20 or 15 year period. You're telling me you remember how, first off, 15 days ago, let alone 5 years ago, 10 years ago, to really be able to compare back on that. I don't think that's a fair assessment or really a fair study. So when I actually broke it down, I can put that in the email if you guys want that as well. How we covered and how we look at it. So I think red meat gets a bad rap is basically what I'm trying to get at. I'm not saying you should eat a pound of bacon and like all the other things that can be categorized with that. But having red meat and even fish and chicken with a healthy balance and rotation in your week is an important thing. But I've also found, and maybe give me some insight this too, is creating a sensitivity to foods when you overeat them too much. If you're constantly eating chicken every single day, three times a day, a lot of times we even see, I've had bodybuilders or high-level athletes come in and we would do a food sensitivity test and we would find they'd be sensitive to the things they were eating every single day because they didn't allow variety into their diet and they became sensitive to it.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing act of, you do want to have it in your diet, but you don't want to rely on it because then you potentially could create a negative response to it. But if you don't have it in your diet at all, like when people pull gluten out and they're not celiac, the potential downside is when you do have it, you have a worse response to it. So it's, I'm not saying go ahead, have bagels all the time either, but maybe throw it in there once a month. Or it's okay to have in a sense so your body can at least know what to do when it does have it. It doesn't create as much of a damaging hormonal response or digestional response or all the things that go along with it. So that's another, I think, really big one too. Talk to me, Snap.
So if you think you might have deficiencies because of cravings, why not just take a vitamin every day?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Yeah. So, and that's not necessarily not an option. The potential downside is we can only absorb so much at one time, whether it's protein, whether it's vitamins, whether it's minerals. And so much you'll see of vitamins and minerals out there and supplements. It's like, oh, we got like 5,000% vitamin C. And the other part you'll see in this chart is the toxicity levels that when I say toxicity, I don't want you to think that it's going to kill you, but there's a adverse effect to having too much of these things. So you want to block that balance. Now, even if, let's say, we dial it in with our supplements and it has exactly the amount that we need, I look at the bioavailability, what's more natural for our body. So I think it's a plan B, and it's an option, but in that word, supplement says what it should be. It should be a supplement to your food. Because if you're relying solely on this outside external source that's not naturally occurring and your body's not used to absorbing, even if you're in rest and digest, it may not fully absorb all those nutrients out. So being able to get it from your food, A, you get the micronutrient, the vitamins and minerals, but then there's a caloric impact, there's a hormonal impact, and then there's that satiation feeling, and then there's a hormone associated with that ghrelin that we can see. And what I found, I'm just going to kind of throw this out there to talk about a psychological impact. So they did a study, and they had two different milkshakes. They had what was told to their group to be a decadent, delicious, heavy, creamy, amazing milkshake. And then another group, it was a diet, you know, low-calorie milkshake. And what they did, it was the same exact milkshake, literally the same exact thing. The group that had the decadent milkshake, not only did they feel fuller psychologically, but they saw their ghrelin hormone levels actually change in response to that. So it can't just be a psychological effect alone. There's something that's happening in connection to it. Meaning if you think that you're full, your body hormonally actually responds to that by actually having more of that satiated hormone ghrelin in your body. That's at least what they found in the study versus the diet group. Their levels were actually lower. So they felt less satiated, not just psychologically, but hormonally their body responded differently, which I think is kind of awesome. So the point of me saying that is food can be a great thing, not just because of the nutrients and all that, but actually from the satiation feeling and then not causing cravings later. So that's the reason why I like it. I just love eating food. Like, that's why I'd rather eat food than drink like alcohol or drink calories, because I'd rather have that feeling of eating it and enjoying that process and the satiation that comes with it. And I just like eating. So that's just a whole nother thing in and of itself. Does that make sense? Like, does that kind of answer?
I love eating too.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's a good, and then think about it. If you eat a salad versus take a multivitamin, maybe sometimes time efficiency wise, the multivitamin might be the option. But I think also when you sit, and they also will have studies that will back this as well. When you sit and you take a minute to enjoy your food, you actually absorb more of it. And the satiation feeling, again, kind of comes with that. So taking that moment to sit and enjoy your food instead of eating in the car, on the run, rushed, feeling stressed, going to work. Or like even sometimes in the work environment that I work with Mission, I make sure I take my time to eat lunch no matter what's going on. Maybe I'll even push it a little bit, but I make sure I take that time because I want to have my body take those nutrients in and fuel myself and all that fun stuff. So I think just having that connection is important too. Yeah. What are the kind of questions we got, guys? Because I got some other stuff we're going to go into. But
do you have any tips or tricks to not eat a whole pint of Ben & Jerry's every time you buy a pint?
Yeah.
In one sitting?
Yeah.
Don't buy smaller ones.
Don't have it in you.
Half gallon of ice cream.
Yeah. That, and that's like, I know that sounds like such a simple, crazy, silly answer, but it's true. Like, so I operate with this principle. If it's in my house, I'm going to eat it. 100%. I'm going to eat it. And I have self-control. I have discipline. It's not that you won't eat it all in one shot, but if it's there, you're going to eat it. And I'm not saying don't have it either. But that's my first recommendation. Now let's say we already got past that first recommendation. It's already in the house. Cool. That's also an option too. What we can do is also combine, again, the fibrous or slower digesting thing. So I like adding protein whenever I can because it'll... In thought, and a lot of times when we looked at these mixturing of foods, it'll slow that glycemic impact down. So whether it's, I'm not saying ice cream and some chicken, maybe don't do that. Like, that may not be the best move, but that's why I default to nuts and seeds and almond butters a lot, because even though it is higher in fat and it calorically can get away from you if you're not careful, it'll have protein in it as well. So it can slow digestion. My only concern when we have things like ice cream and things like that, we add protein from a fat source, is when you mix sugar and fats together, that's where you're at your highest risk for across-the-board issues, whether it's maybe inflammation or heart disease, we're talking about hypertension, things like that. So it's fouling the balance. Now, not doing like half a jar of peanut butter with a pint of ice cream, that's where we're asking for trouble. But if we do like 2 tablespoons, we get 8 to 10 grams of protein that can slow down the digestion of that serving of ice cream.
Yeah.
Did you get an in-body scan? Getting her in body. I think that can be a really helpful. Also, what's interesting, just simple tip, cinnamon has been shown to help regulate insulin levels, so your body doesn't have as much of an insulin response, so you don't go on that roller coaster ride. So I'll even add insulin. If I'm going to put like creamer or sweetener in my coffee, I add cinnamon to it, and I kind of like the taste. I'll also put it on ice cream or pie just because it also tastes good too. But also just having that as a benefit. And there's herbs and spices I included in our cheat sheet that I'm sending out because I feel like they get left behind a lot too, whether we're talking about turmeric, whether we're talking about cinnamon, whether we're talking about the variations of all of that. There's benefit that they add as well. So I hope that makes sense.
This is a tip that mainly also is if you sprinkle a little salt on your ice cream, if it makes sense, depending on what kind of ice cream it is, but like vanilla, chocolate, bring a little sea salt on it. Maybe, I don't know about you, but most other people, it'll make you eat less of the ice cream because the salt, I have to refer back, but the salt reacts with your, or interacts with your taste receptors and kind of, it's very layperson what I'm saying, but it just kind of opens up your taste buds, so you feel more of that sugar or that sweetness. You're like, oh, it tastes so good, and you're actually satisfied quicker than if without the salt, because it just kind of hits you. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good point, is when you combine like sweet and savory, or that's why like sweet and sour sauces work. The other side to it is the fast food companies have exploited that. So yeah, that's where you got to be careful of what foods you pick too. Like, I think that's a great option with their ice cream too. But if you go to McDonald's, whatever, let's say whatever fast food we're at, they also, that's why they try and like promote Frosties with their burgers, because the sweet and the salt mixed together, they're trying to push it as you're going to eat more. So you got to see how your body responds. Yeah, exactly. You just dip them right in as a spoon, right? Everyone's done that, I think, or hopefully has at least once in their life and had that experience. So as long as you have the prop, like, as long as it's like a pint of ice cream, not like a bucket,
right?
You know what I mean? But also, everyone responds. That's what's so interesting about the body, and I think it's so fascinating, is that we could each do the same thing, and on paper and on the textbooks, based on the studies, we should technically respond the same way. We could each respond differently based on like genetic expression and stress levels and where we're currently at and our breathing. There's all these other factors that come into play that I think becomes really interesting.
What about somebody who's who's like chronically under-eating?
Ooh.
Like they get really full and they have a really hard time just eating maintenance level calories for their activity level.
That's a great question. I got a whole category just for that.
That's a great question. I was going to say, when I started doing my
like low intensity steady state cardio, my hunger, my appetite goes down.
Boom. Really? So now, so when we talk about a general, let's say, lack of appetite, that's one category I broke down. And you're going to see a lot of actual B vitamin potential deficiencies associated with that. So one of the first ones that we list is vitamin B1, which is thiamine. And then I'll kind of go over through a couple lists of them, and we'll re-explore them. So, or B3. And then we also have silicone and tyrosine. Oh, actually, and we got manganese and chloride. Dang. So just looking at B vitamins alone, again, you're going to see nuts and seeds a lot on this list too. So whether it's nuts and seeds and green cruciferous vegetables, those are going to be popular ones. But believe it or not, and this is – do you guys remember that expression, like, what am I, chopped liver? Like, chopped liver, I feel like, gets a bad rap. But the liver is one of the most nutrient-dense organs from animal meats. Obviously, make sure – I'm not saying go out and kill a random animal and eat that liver without proper treatment and cooking and all that fun stuff. But – I think the liver kind of gets forgotten about as the nutrient dense. And I think an interesting story to that is in most species, the alpha male gets to eat the liver and then everyone else gets to everything else. And it's because it's the most nutrient dense part. And somehow, I don't actually know if that's why they do it, but I think there's something too that the alpha male gets to eat it. There's got to be something associated with that. So yeah, going back to lack of appetite, it could probably be a B vitamin deficiency. Or the other side to it is that I find, and from a neurological perspective, is that when we get into a certain state of exercise, and I find it not as – with cardio kind of in general, when we start pushing past a certain point, you get certain past. You also got to look at what's their stress level like. Is there a thyroid potential issue? Maybe we have to look at other factors. But I think by – if we knock out the deficiencies in the response, yes, okay, great, it's that. But it could also just be how did we get there in the first place? Was that always the case? Or was it? Is there some kind of activity we're doing that maybe you feel is associated with it, and there may be just a neurological thing or a hormonal response that's happening? And I don't know if Dr. Rainey, if you have maybe more insight to it or thoughts, but I think that's potentially what's going on there.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. I would ask, or I don't know if this is a real-life example, Alex, but is it you just don't – you or the person doesn't have appetite – in general, or they like just don't feel like eating?
It's for a friend.
Okay. Sure.
I'll tell you, this man works out 6 days a week, once or twice a day. He's over 200 pounds and frequently eats about 1,100 calories.
Let's talk about his work for a second. So I'm sure there's going to be big chunks of time where he's got to work and maybe has become accustomed to not eating and not being able to eat, and there might have been an auto-regulation to that. So typically what happens is maybe. So that's something what my kind of mind defaults to, especially when we look at fighters. There's two things that happen. Your body is really good at wanting to go back to homeostasis or trying to maintain this level of like regulation. So if your body starts to pick up on, man, I'm only getting fed like 1,500 calories a day and I'm burning this much, it may start to change its own body composition too. So that's why I think sometimes what can happen with someone like that is they may see like maybe their weight goes down, but their body fat percentage might actually go up because they're losing muscle mass and their body's deteriorating. That's a little bit of a sensitive word, but breaking itself down to accommodate to its caloric intake. Mm-hmm. So lifestyle factors, hormonal factors, and maybe potential deficiencies as well. But I think I might also have an idea of who this person is. So I think that, you know, I have maybe understanding of the lifestyle. So knowing you're going to be working for 6 to 8 hour chunks where you can't really do anything else but do that, that potentially may also be a causing factor to it. But it doesn't mean it's an impossible factor to work around. It's just something we have to be mindful of, right? And that's where I think maybe more fats could be easier. Whatever the caloric density is, as long as it's a good choice and it fits into their lifestyle, sometimes can become beneficial. I find sometimes there's this misconception that you have to have either 3 meals a day or 2 meals a day or 5 meals a day, small frequent meals. I think everybody's different. So to me, it's, again, the perfect plan, not on paper. It's the perfect plan for you. So your perfect plan is going to be different than your perfect, and so on and so forth. So I could say, all right, this is everything I calculated based on your metabolic rate that you can get from the in-body scan. That's what I think is really cool about the in-body scan is it tells you your basal metabolic rate based on your muscle tissue and your fat and your height and weight and all the things that's getting into it. So on paper, if you're supposed to eat 1,800 calories and we feed you 1,800 calories and your body's still not responding, hey, you may have to actually eat 16 because even though on paper the formula says one thing, your body's responding differently. Or we may have to actually have more to get that response. And we may have to do it in two meals because of how your time and your lifestyle allow. So we're going to have to break it up into 800 and 800 as opposed to someone might have to do 200 calories 8 times a day depending on what's available to them. So I think sometimes just looking at the bigger picture, trying the deficiencies, but then also looking at why are we even there in the first place. The why behind the what, to me, is the big one. Yeah. What else, guys? Talk, man. What do we think? Questions on what we talk about in general. Like, I feel like I talk fast. I kind of threw a bunch of stuff out. The biggest thing is I want you guys to walk out with, like, to me, the philosophy is the biggest thing. So the biggest thing I want you to walk out of here with is listening to your body and understanding that cravings aren't just you being a lack of discipline or undisciplined or something's – it's on you. Don't burden that responsibility from a psychological standpoint. Understand there's something probably physiologically happening or something that's causing it. There's a causation behind it. And if we can learn to interpret that and then use this craving guide, I promise you, not just the holidays but from a lifestyle perspective throughout the year, you'll notice, oh, wow, it just becomes a little bit easier. Just and one thing I wanted to add to it, and Rena, tell me what your thoughts are too, is if we're cycling up in weight more than 10% of our body weight. So for example, I'm 200 pounds. If I got down to 190, my goal is to get down to 180, 185. That's where I'm more comfortable walking around weight, so I'm not fluctuating as much. But I would fight at 170, go back up to 200. Fight at 170, go back up to 200. And that constant 30-pound fluctuation, you know, 5-6 times a year, I've seen in the morbidity rates in studies drastically increases your chance of having chronic conditions, heart disease, complications of diabetes, or just dying earlier in life because you're constantly changing that weight. So if we can find a lifestyle that allows you to keep your weight down, yeah, like, dude, and 100%, like, dude. And even if you look at, not to say we have eating disorders, but if you look at some of the symptoms and indications of an eating disorder for fighters, you could almost categorize from a medical term. Most fighters have eating disorders. Not that saying we're not healthy, but how we're approaching the weight cuts can be too drastic for our bodies. You know what I mean? Like for example, Brian, if you didn't care about weight, you didn't have to worry about competition, you could probably, maybe not 220, but
210.
Yeah, like, yes, yeah, so like 2+. You know what I mean? And then going to 185, you know what I mean? So that's where, and you're doing it intelligently. You're not doing it in a 2-week period where you're like, all right, I'm dropping 20 pounds in 2 weeks. Yeah, so you're doing it in a longer, sustained period of time, so there's less stress associated with it as well. And then hopefully, once you get there, the goal isn't to bump back up to 210 and then drop it back down, at least not for a long period of time, right?
So, 195.
You're right, yeah. So even just like 10 pounds makes a difference. 15 pounds makes a huge difference, I think, across the board. So that's my 2 cents on that part of it and the weight fluctuation. And what else?
I guess my last 2 cents would be, or my recap would be, get to know your body, which is the name of my business. Get to know your body, get to know your body composition. In terms of nutrition, if you don't remember anything else, remember what Mike just said right now in that recap, especially when it comes to if you are trying to change your body composition, be it gain muscle, lose fat, to do it, you want to do it in a way that you can, you avoid that, those ups and downs, the yo-yoing, but also something that you can sustain. So when I talk about foods, I always go back to eat whatever you want, but if we want to put any kind of restrictions, let it be, most of it be whole foods. Try and fit those vegetables in, just like grandma and great grandma used to say, that it still holds true. Nice variety of different vegetables, green leafy, colorful peppers, and all the vegetables out there. And lastly, listen to your body and don't eat. Well, Mike already said this too, but the whole willpower thing, I know I see a lot of people from all walks of life, and one of the main things that people come to is the mindset of, oh, I'm a failure. I just don't have the willpower to do X, Y, and Z, to not eat the pint of ice cream every day, or to not get out and move.
Bus, man. Every day.
In the past.
No, I believe. Also,
dude, I've been a pie every day for like weeks.
If you're gonna cheat, cheat.
Yeah, like enjoy. Like that's what
I think, again, when we go after talking about the fights, too, and not to cut it, but, like, if you restrict it to, like, oh, I can only do it in a 12-hour window, that could be dangerous in that 12-hour window, too. Mm-hmm. You could not just do a lot of damage, but you can create an unhealthy habit there, too. Yeah. So.
Exactly. And it's all physiology. It's nothing. I mean, I guess I just want to say, I know we were using the word cheat. Even I don't really like to use the word cheat anymore because it just has that stigma and that negative connotation. And I know I have used some words like that too. But even if we can even take those out of our vocabulary, it really helps with the whole. The mind is probably one of the most. Anyway, we don't need to go into philosophy and argue this, but probably even more powerful than the body.
Yeah.
You know, so mindset, whole foods, listen to your body, know your body, cravings, you know, once again, those are just messages from your body to tell you, usually to tell you what your body is needing more of. So that's all I got. That's my recap.
Yeah, and that's and
I like this.
Just to add on to it, that's pretty much it. Again, like the big thing I like to cover here to you guys is open it up for questions that you're gonna have. So if you guys wanna hang out and ask questions, do an in body with Rena. I'm gonna hang out, and big thing too is like reach out, like email me, email Rena, email the gym, get us on Facebook, Instagram, like I love this. This is what I do for a living for a reason because I truly enjoy it. And I'm sure, and we've had discussions too. That's why you're involved with it. And there's a passion behind it. So we want to help, whatever that means. And if it doesn't mean, and my biggest thing is it doesn't mean working with me. I'm not so egotistical thinking I can help everybody. I'm not going to be able to. So whether it's having great people like Dr. Rena or having other people that we work with and partners, whether it's Alex or Brian or the other trainer, even same thing with training. Like, I think knowing what you need to go for, like knowing, hey, if you want to get better at jiu-jitsu, go talk to Brian. If you want to get better at Muay Thai, talk to Alex. If you want to get a workout and break up, talk to Alex. That's knowing where that fits in and knowing you can reach out for help and then redirecting it, I think is an important factor. So that's what I hope you guys feel comfortable doing. And hopefully you guys got some value from this today. And even for future things, if there's things you want us to cover, let me know. Because I'll do podcasts. We'll cover different topics. I'll do articles. We'll do a whole bunch of fun stuff. So I just appreciate you guys coming out on a Saturday. You know, hopefully we got it early enough for you guys. We were kind of debating whether it was better to do it later in the day, earlier in the day.
Yeah.
So we're going to dial down the sweet spots on time. And again, if you want to write your email down and your name up front, I'll email not only the info that we covered today. I've been recording it from an audio perspective, so I'll get with Rena and send her if there's anything that she wants to tweak or add or anything like that. So we'll have it as a resource in case you guys don't remember exactly what we talked about every single minute. For 2 hours, pretty much, a lot to cover, and then I'll bullet point and also give you some visuals and articles that I have relating to all these different topics: the cravings, the micronutrients, recipes. Again, we're talking about healthy holidays, so healthy recipe options that you can have, some substitutes you can use with different flours, coconut flour versus traditional flour, things like that. So that's my 2 cents, guys. I appreciate it, and yeah, we just got leader. Thanks, guys. I'm a big high fiver. I like the high fives.
Yeah, we'll come back for a half hour.
Hey, she's been here almost 3 hours. She's been
good. She's crushing it a lot.
Yeah.
Al, you need a high five, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, dude.
That was a complicated way to say that.
So, I just wanted to say thank you guys again for watching, listening, consuming that episode. If you guys enjoyed it and you haven't already, please like, please comment. If you haven't reviewed, please leave a review. If you haven't followed or subscribed, please do that as well. Again, it tremendously helps us out. And then just a quick reminder, if you guys want more resources, we have them below. We have our programs, everything from free all the way up to paid and kind of everything in between. Dial in with the customization, and we have more information on different programs and resources in our newsletter. So if you haven't signed up for that, do so below. It's free. And that is it, y'all. See you on the next one.